Welcome to the debt collection drill. Moss & Barnett is pleased to present the Debt Collection Drill, the podcast featuring Moss & Barnett shareholders John Rossman and Mike Ponson, providing sage tips for improving collections and compliance.
Hi, everybody. This is Mike Ponson, attorney at Moss & Barnett, here for the May 2011 installment of the Debt Collection Drill. With me, as always, is John Rossman, chair of our Creditors, Remedies, and Bankruptcy Practice Group at Moss & Barnett. John?
Thanks, Mike. You know, we've gotten a great response to the previous podcasts, and our topic for today was a recommendation or suggestion made by one of the listeners. And the topic today is defeating marginal FDCPA claims using a couple of different techniques. One is looking at damages, and the other is looking at materiality. Really, this analysis starts with a Supreme Court case from a couple years ago, which was the German versus Carlyle case. And in that case, the Supreme Court held that where a debt collector had sent out an FDCPA notice that had a technical misstatement in the validation language, that was indeed a violation of the FDCPA, and there was a finding that the bona fide error defense did not apply to mistakes of law. But Mike, what happened when that case went back down to the sent back down to the district court to determine damages?
Well, John, in that one, the court awarded no damages, finding there was no material violation of the FDCPA.
And what's really interesting about the German case is, as much as it was really shook the industry with the findings that were made by the Supreme Court, and you look at how long this case was litigated and how it was litigated all the way up to the Supreme Court, remanded back down to the district court for a finding on damages, the court then found that there were no damages. And the court really focused on the language in the act, in the FDCPA, that discusses damages, and did a five-point analysis to determine that although there was a technical mistake with the language in the validation notice, the debtor didn't actually suffer any damages.
I believe, John, there's been four or five circuit courts that have weighed in on the materiality issue. Is that what you have found?
No, it's absolutely true. There's several courts that have looked at this. There's one right here from Minnesota, and that's the Neal versus Bullseye case. That was the What Would Jesus Do case. And in that case, the collection agency sent out a letter that had the letters WWJD, the plaintiff, the consumer, sued, alleging that that was a threatening and a shaming technique. But also within that allegation, the allegations in the complaint by the plaintiff, was this contention that because a notice was marked second notice, when indeed it was not the second notice, that somehow violated the FDCPA. And the court held in that case that even though it was not the second notice, as it stated right in the letter, that was not a material violation and therefore dismissed that portion of the claim.
You know, John, speaking of materiality, I think an important case to look at, or a quote, a phrase that I like to look at from the Pettit Retrieval Masters case out of the Seventh Circuit, is Justice Easterbrook and his holding or statement that the least sophisticated consumer should not be linked to the very last rung on the sophistication ladder. Rather, these individuals should have some ability to read with care a collection letter. And I think that ties in nicely to the whether or not the language is material and whether or not there is therefore a violation of the FDCPA.
Judge Easterbrook is one of my favorite jurists in terms of his writing style, in terms of some of the metaphors that he uses, and that analogy that he used in the Pettit case, talking about the lowest rung of sophistication, I thought was really a brilliant metaphor. Judge Easterbrook also ruled in another case dealing with this materiality issue, and that was the Hahn versus Triumph partnership case. And keep in mind, this is a Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals case, so this isn't a district court case, this is a Court of Appeals case. And in the Hahn case, there was a technical misstatement in the letter as far as the delineation between interest and principal. And in that case, Judge Easterbrook threw out the case and held that a statement cannot mislead unless it is material. So a false but non-material statement is not actionable. So really in the Hahn case, what we see is the courts are saying it's not enough that you have a hyper-technical violation of the FDCPA, it has to be something that's actually material.
Correct, John, and I think another quote that is important from that case is Judge Easterbrook stating that the FDCPA is designed to provide information that helps consumers choose intelligently, and by definition, immaterial information neither contributes to that objective nor undermines it. So I think that's a very telling. You know, another phrase that I like that came out in case law recently here, and I think this is out of the Sixth Circuit, is the courts have taken notice that, you know, are we to believe that a consumer sitting at home has incurred a $400 bill, opts not to pay that bill, doesn't dispute it, gets a letter that has a small variation from what's required under the FDCPA, and therefore runs to their attorney's office and says, here, file a lawsuit on this. It's misleading and confusing. In that case, the Miller versus Javich case, had cited to a Supreme Court decision where it said that there comes a point when this court should not be ignorant as judges of what we know as man. So I think that's a very telling quote as well, how courts are looking at these cases that are brought on these hyper-technical violation issues.
I think that's a great point, and it points up something that, you know, we've seen and we know in the industry, which is we look at claims sometimes and we wonder what the basis is for the claims and whether, you know, any violation of the FDCPA can possibly lead to damages. And like we've been discussing here, there's really two ways that these technical violations of the FDCPA can still be dealt with. And the first is looking at damages. And even though there was a statement that may have been technically false but didn't mislead anyone, that would go to an issue of damages. And then the other issue, of course, being materiality and whether these statements actually cause some type of confusion or misunderstanding.
And I know, John, you had sent me a case last weekend as to damages, thankfully showing how courts have kind of swung around. And, you know, keep in mind, under the FDCPA, you're allowed up to $1,000 in statutory damages. In the case you sent me last weekend, I believe out of the Middle District of Florida, the magistrate judge had recommended a finding of $100 in statutory damages and $0 in actuals on a default motion wherein the plaintiff was seeking $50,000 in actual damages.
The amazing thing about that case, Mike, is the plaintiff claimed, and it was undisputed, the plaintiff claimed that she filed bankruptcy, that there was a call made to her after she filed bankruptcy where the collector allegedly said, and here again it's unrefuted because it was a default, the collector allegedly said, we don't care if you file bankruptcy, and I'm paraphrasing, we're still going to collect this debt, we're going to take a federal lien against you. And a second call was made. So two calls were made after she filed bankruptcy. Both calls were, as alleged by the plaintiff, abusive, no doubt about it. And the plaintiff also alleged that she lost sleep and she was unable to eat because of what happened from these calls. The court looked at it and, on the issue of damages, awarded nominal damages. And the interesting thing about that case, too, at the very end, the court also withheld judgment for a later day on the issue of attorney's fees. As we know, attorney's fees is a major component of these FDCPA cases. And in these strategies that we're talking about, looking at materiality, looking at damages, I have to believe that if a court is going to award zero or a small amount of damages or is going to find that a violation is technical but not material, there's not going to be any award of attorney's fees to a plaintiff's attorney.
You know, one can hope that we see more case law coming down the pike such as that. And again, keep in mind that case is only the recommendation of the magistrate, and we still have to see how the district court weighs in.
It's a great point, but I think what we're seeing here in some is a judicial trend toward scrutinizing more closely these FDCPA claims. We are all out of time once again. Mike, thank you very much. I'm John Rossman, and on behalf of everyone here at Moss & Barnett, we'd like to thank Angela Holden, who is our executive producer, and we look forward to talking to you next time. Thank you.
Visit the website for this podcast at thedebtcollectiondrill.blogspot.com. You can send feedback to The Drill at moss-barnett.com and follow us on Twitter at collectdrill. This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on the program and any listener. Please remember that we can only give general information and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns.